Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We still have Larry with us. Larry may be the one of the few people that can appreciate the statement that I was presenting at the end of our program yesterday. I'm going to go through this, Larry, and see if what I say resonates with you. My big concern for our world is the effect of political correctness and the effect of religion. Between those two things, most people are rendered incapable of exercising good judgment. So we can share with our listeners why we ought not bomb Syria, why that is a bad idea, why we should not have invaded Afghanistan, why we should not have invaded Iraq, how we made bad situations worse in those countries, how we squandered lives in Korea and Vietnam. And we can present the evidence, but if people can't process that evidence, it doesn't do them any good. And the government, the manipulators, are counting on the population's inability to be informed and rational, unwillingness to be informed and inability to be rational. So I'm going to present to you, I think, that the ways that governments go to preclude their people's understanding so they can get by with murder. And feel free to challenge this. I think that what I'm going to share is reasonably profound. The reason that there is no longer any hope collectively for the world, at least as a whole, only a limited number of people are going to be saved, is because egocentric and greedy, conscienceless, religious and political men and women have deliberately corrupted both sides of the knowledge-conscience equation. In totalitarian societies, like those found in fascist, socialist, and Islamic nations, access to information is constrained. And that which is available is often propaganda, wholly inaccurate. So without access to good information, in any Islamic country, and in China, for example, reason is useless and wise choices are impossible because you can't process inaccurate information and come up with an accurate decision. Now, in free societies, democratic countries, if you will put those free and democratic in air quotes, information is so abundant that we almost drown in it. So to rob people of their ability to process that information wisely, good and evil, right and wrong, decisions, the elitists have created an immoral code known as political correctness. And it's based on the irrational notion of being intolerant of intolerance. And you can see that anyone who violates the standards of political correctness is crucified immediately. They lose their jobs. They lose their earnings. They are swept away because political correctness has become the primary moral code of politics, of religion, of the media, and most certainly of academia. Now, what it means is that you can't be judgmental. You can't be discerning. You can't be discriminating. And if you don't have the ability or the will to process information judgmentally, you can't be just. You can't be civil. You can't be moral. And you squander free will. You are nothing more than another indoctrinated lemming following the other lemmings off the cliff to your death.
And you want me to challenge that?
I would.
I can't. The people that crucify you are the very people that preach the political correctness. So,
correct.
No, these are profound statements. They need to be made. They're real. That's where we're at.
And we have, through our universities, particularly through our universities, Larry, over the last two or three generations, we have created an environment in universities where they are wholly politically correct. I mean, that is their mantra. They would rather be known for their diversity than they would be known for their quality of their education. Look at any one of the statements of university presidents or chancellors. They'll all say it. They want to be known for their diversity. They want to be known for their tolerance far more than for their educational prowess. And so the young people that are indoctrinated from grammar school, through middle school, through high school, up through universities, come out with a completely jaundiced view of the world. Their moral code, their ability to act in a just and wise moral fashion is completely destroyed.
Right. So, every facet of society is filled with it. Every corner. It's the media.
Correct. Right.
It's common speak now. It's taught in universities, like you're saying, the schools.
Right.
It's the government working with the school systems, working with the media.
Correct.
And, you know, it's a hard thing to get over if you want to walk out of Babylon.
And here's Islam, through its Quran, ordering Muslims to continue to fight and kill Christians until Islam is the only religion on earth, and you've got the Pope, through political correctness, saying we need to be tolerant of Muslims, to understand Muslims, to embrace Muslims, and to recognize we all worship the same God. It is political correctness run amok in religion as well. And you've got the Protestant preacher Warren here in the United States that actually has conceived a new religion called Chrislam. A blend of Christianity and Islam.
This is the Rick Warren fellow.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and of course, to do so means you have to ignore 99% of the Quran. You have to ignore 100% of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And you can. There are things, by the way, that you can blend between Paul and Muhammad, because both were inspired and possessed by the same Spirit, by their own admission. But it is. It has absolutely destroyed our ability to think. Now, in this regard, you and I devote enormous amounts of our time to providing mountains of evidence, all of which proves conclusively that the religions of man, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, are wrong. In fact, we cite the only unassailable source, Yahweh himself, God's word, to prove that there is a 0% possibility that Islam, Judaism, or Christianity are trustworthy. And if somebody is a devout Christian, Muslim, or Jew, religious Jew, what is the chance that evidence and reason, when the evidence comes from God and the reason is unassailable, what are the likelihood that they will be positively influenced by
near zero? I mean, if they're really indoctrinated, it is zero. It just won't happen.
Yeah, it is. It is actually zero. Yeah. That religion puts a person in a position without hope. Religion is created by man for the purpose of giving false hope. It's based primarily on the idea that people can't understand death, and therefore they want to believe that their loved ones, they will meet again. Go by any cemetery, and you know, most of the tombs say, you know, we'll meet again in heaven. They want to believe that they're going to be reunited with their loved ones in heaven. Religion gives them that promise, although it's a false one. It's false hope. And therefore, people look at this life and say, boy, there's all sorts of foibles here, all sorts of issues. So maybe the life on the next tier is going to be better. Not recognizing that the reason that life here is full of heartache is because of religion. And so why would you trust that which is untrustworthy, which has made your life miserable, as the answer to what's going to provide hope for you on the other side?
Well, I've often said, and you've kind of tied the two together, you know, academia, government, religion.
Mm-hmm.
I've often said, could you imagine if we hadn't poured trillions of dollars, and this is a worldwide problem, not just a U.S. problem, into religious buildings, into school systems that are floundering and failing, into giant mega capital buildings and government offices. Can you imagine the wealth that would be available in the entire world?
Right. Oh, if we could take the money that has been squandered on religious edifices and military mechanisms, and we used our wealth and our genius to promote things that were nurturing and positive and productive, how different the world would be. I mean, all you have to do to understand why God chose to flood Mesopotamia, where people had run amok with their Nesalma nearly 5,000 years ago, is to look at what we have created, the mess that we have created today, and our willingness to deceive one another and to kill one another. If you were God, would you say, man, this is hopeless. This is absolutely hopeless.
Well, it had to be way, way, way hopeless then. I mean, in order for him to do the flood. But I have to say, we're on the precipice of that again. So it's,
he's returning. He's going to do the same thing again. It's just that he's not going to do it with water next time. And man will have done most of the damage to himself by the time that that he returns. We're going to engage in a nuclear conflagration. We will do such harm to our planet. Plus, we're going to be hit by an asteroid. So most of humanity is going to kill itself in wars prior to his return, and there will be terrible plagues that will be unleashed on the Earth, great pandemics, largely of our own making. And when he returns, all of those who survive but who are still opposed to him are going to be incinerated. So he is going to do it again, and he's going to do it again and return the entire Earth back to the Garden of Eden status for his family. And only his family is going to be able to live there.
You know, if everybody understood the Yovel count, I wish they did, and that would be a really good show, you know, for us to do.
They
would understand that we are here at the precipice of a whole new precipice, we might say. It's all but over. And the idea that we're going to band together in patriotic groups and somehow save the country and save the world, if you're really somebody who believes Scripture, you have to understand that will not happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
It will not happen.
No.
And it's way past the point of return. Yahweh will return right on time due to the Yovel count in the year 2033.
Yeah.
Exactly 40 Yovel after the sacrifice.
Right. And then 5 days later, he's going to turn the earth back into the conditions of the Garden of Eden, just as we have read
when we walk
in
on Sukkah. Which is that's what the whole reflection of the Shabbat's about. It's the seventh day of rest.
Yeah.
And we're on our way there now.
When we return to Shattering Myths after the break, we will explain then why the beginning of the program focuses on these failed institutions that are damning our societies, and why Larry has mentioned the Yovel, what the Yovel represents, and what its timing tells us. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I had promised that I was going to answer two questions, questions that I've answered before, but we have Dwight having called in from Dallas, Texas, and we're going to entertain Dwight's question first. Welcome to Shattering Myths, Dwight.
Thank you, sir. My question is, I'm running into a group of people who, I guess it's kind of Black Hebrews or whatever, and they claiming that, I know your friend Larry had mentioned he had encountered a group of these people last week, but I wish he had gotten into a deeper critique of this viewpoint. That's why I'm calling back, because I want to get a deeper critique of that outlook. If you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Let me give you a quick review, and then I'll let Larry answer your question as well. And racially, it's very difficult for anyone to trace their heritage back to any one of the 12 tribes anymore, because the genealogical records are lost. But there appears to have been a number of Yehudim, Israelites, who went down to the northeast coast of Africa and intermarried with the Africans in Ethiopia and became known as the Falashas. And they've done some DNA. In fact, I visited the Falasha people. They make a lot of claims like having the Ark of the Covenant, which is not true. But they've done some DNA studies, and they have found that, yes, indeed, there's traces of Hebrew DNA in these Ethiopian Africans known as the Falashas. So that's the scoop in terms of, are there some African Jews? Absolutely. There are Jews now intermixed with probably every race on earth, and in Ethiopia there's a united group of them. Now, As it relates to being potentially Jewish, there are advantages. Yahweh was very clear. The Yisraelites are his chosen people. Every revelation that Yahweh has made has been through Yisraelites. The Day of Reconciliations that Larry was talking about on October 2nd in 2033, in the Day of Reconciliations, he's coming to reconcile his relationship with Yehudim and with Yisraelites. So they absolutely are his favorites. And so that one race, however diluted it may have become, is special to God. I don't think I have any Jewish DNA, but who knows? I know that Yahweh has made it possible for us Goyim, non-Israelites, to be adopted into his family exactly the same way that someone who is racially a Yehudim or Israelite is adopted into his family. There's one Torah for all of us. There's one covenant for all of us. There's one path to God for all of us. And my experience has been that those who emphasize their skin color or their race over Yahweh's Torah, over his path, over his covenant, typically lead people in the wrong direction. So I would be wary of such individuals. Now, that's my answer. Larry, you have a question that Larry should ask? Our answer?
Well, I was also, that was in the Northeast Africa, but most of the people who consider themselves African Americans would have come from probably the west coast of Africa.
That is correct. You know why they came from the west coast of Africa?
Well, slavery.
Yeah, but you know why they were, you know who enslaved them and why they were enslaved in the west coast of Africa?
Muslims.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. What happened is that warring tribes on the west coast of Africa had a habit of enslaving, just like Muslims did originally. They would enslave the young men. They would rape the women, and they would kill the older men. And that's when they warred with various tribes. That was the outcome. And they got to the same place that Muslims did, where they became too many slaves. They were no longer a market for them. And so what they ended up doing is, when they warred with a neighboring tribe, they ended up killing everybody. You know, after raping the women, they ended up killing everybody, women and children and men alike. So the Muslims came in and began, after Muhammad's death, the next 100 years, Muslims were the ultimate barbarians, covering, raiding everything, killing over 200 million people from India to northern, northwestern Africa. And the Muslims said, oh, no, we can make a world market in these slaves. And so, yes, most of the African Americans came from northwestern Africa. A very small percentage came from the area where the Falashas are. And so your logic is sound, my friend. So it appears that they're not well grounded. It's kind of like the Mormons that claim that they are descendants of the Jews who sailed in a mighty boat to the Americas, and that's the basis of the American Indians. You know the truth. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we listen to Larry's response to Dwight's question about the African Americans who claim to be Jewish and have formed kind of their own religious sect as a result, Larry's had some personal experience with them. I do want to at least answer the questions that we posed in the two segments ago. First of all, the reason that we expose military misadventurism, political lies, religious myths, economic realities in the first segment is because it's important for our listeners to know that you ought not trust these human schemes, that rather than being part of the solution, rather than being something you can rely upon, they are the problem. And that you ought to distance yourself from them. And we say this for many reasons, but the dominant one is because the first requirement to participate in a relationship with God is to walk away from your country, to walk away from Babel in particular, which God defines as religious and political, military and economic corruption. So that's why we do it. And The reason that we devote the second hour to Yah's testimony is so that you might know that he is reliable. And just very briefly, the Yobel is 7 times 7 plus 1 years. It happens every 50 years. The Yobel is a time where all slaves are freed. So the Torah is about liberating us from slavery to these human institutions. And all debts are forgiven, which is symbolic of Yahweh forgiving our debt through the celebration of the Mikra of Matzah. And so it is, that is the symbolism of this every 50-year celebration. If you multiply 40 times 50, which 40 being the number of completion of the time of testing throughout Scripture. It rained for 40 days and 40 nights during the flood. The children of Israel wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. Yahusha was tested for 40 days and 40 nights. It's ubiquitous all the way through Yah's testimony. But 40 times 50 is 2,000. And if you look at Yah's timeline from the moment that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the Garden of Eden, 2,000 or 40 Yobel from then is the time that the covenant was established with Abraham. 2,000 years thereafter is the time that Yahusha fulfilled the first four Moed Mikre, enabling the first four all five of the promises of the covenant. And 40 Yobel or 2,000 years from then, which was 33 CE, is 2033. The year that it is obvious that Yahweh is going to return. That is only 20 years on our horizon. So we don't have much time to awaken people to this truth. Now, Larry, could you share your views on this African-American community that claims to be Jewish?
Yeah, it's highly negative. It's race-based. And the problem, okay, right away, it's not that they're saying that there are some blacks with Yehuda blood in them. That's not what they're saying. They're saying all real Yehudi are black.
Oh, wow. So that's even worse.
It's an absolute lie. Look, we know who King Koresh was. King Koresh, right. Along with the Medes, the Persians, went in and they crushed Babylon, didn't they?
Right. Yes, they did.
And one of the things that King Koresh did, they call him Cyrus the Great, although his mm-hmm. name's Koresh. This is another one of these, they have to change mm-hmm. the name for some reason. Koresh was probably one of the kings in the world that was maybe worthy of the title Great. But he freed the people who had been taken into captivity in Babylon, which would have been from three tribes, right? Mm-hmm. They would have been from Benjamin, Judah, and the Lehi.
Right.
Or Levites.
Yeah.
And so these three tribes, without question, could not be black. And here's how you can prove that. They were taken into an area where his kingdom was. Today that's called Shiraz. It's a city known for poetry and wine, kind of a non-religious city in Iran and sort of looked down on by mm-hmm. the current regime. But if you go there, these people have been in this community. I think it started with some 40,000 of them 2,500 years ago. And they've been there for 2,500 years. Simply go to Google, mm-hmm. look up pictures of Iranian Jews and hit images. What you will see is people who look Mid-Eastern and Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Well, yeah, but also, Larry,
you will not see a single black.
Right.
And therefore, anybody promoting the idea that to be one of Yahweh's real people, you have to be black, and
is
promoting a lie. They're
right.
coveting what belongs
right.
to someone else.
Right.
And they're also very hateful of the Jewish people in general, by
right.
the way.
Yeah, plus the Romans.
Attack Judaism, but what we don't do is attack Yehuda.
That's
I am Yehudi.
Yeah, that's right. And in reality, too, when the Romans sacked Jerusalem in 133 as a part of the Bar Kokhba revolt, they hauled and they did the same thing in 70. When they did so, they hauled the Jews into captivity in Italy and then dispersed them through what was then the Roman Empire, where that is why there was such a high concentration of Yehudim in the north. And Yahweh even says when he reestablishes Israel, he will call them out of the north. But at some time, it is not only possible, it is likely that some Israelites migrated to what is today Ethiopia. And there are definitely some Africans with Jewish ancestry. So,
yeah,
Dwight, that's
a
pretty...
And no one is disputing that. But what you can't do is say all real Jews are black. Can't do
well,
that.
Of course.
And
no.
That's what the Hebrew Roots Movement does.
Right.
It stands all known history, facts, reality, and
right.
It promotes a racist agenda through what... From what I
right.
can tell, is another religion, because they run around with covering their heads,
correct.
You know, looking pious, and all the other nonsense that we, you know, equate with religion.
There are two Hebrew roots that we should pay attention to. One is that the language of Revelation, the language of heaven, the language of God, is Hebrew. And so if you want to understand what Yah has to say, you need to read Hebrew. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be able to know you have to learn a different language. There's marvelous tools that can take anyone and equip them to be able to study Yah's testimony in Hebrew. And the second is that Yah speaks very favorably of the descendants of Abraham and Sarah, and then through them of Ishmael and, not Ishmael, but Yishak, laughter, and Jacob. And so it is important to realize that there is one race that is important to Yah. It's the Israelites, and he's going to reconcile his relationship with them. But all of the rest of us have exactly the same opportunity in the same way that do the Israelites. Dwight,
I will point out that my last name, our last name, was Hendricks Meyer. Doesn't get any more Jewish than that. Okay,
that's true. Yep.
And now here's the thing, though. I was born in Iowa.
Yes.
Now there's an actual Yahweh tells us in Yasha Yahu exactly how any foreign born child can enter the covenant, doesn't he?
Yes.
So that would include me, wouldn't
yes, it?
Yes,
it would. Yes,
and
sure
it would include anyone else that wants to join the covenant. If they're foreign born, there's only one way to do it, and it doesn't matter what race, tribe.
Right.
Ethnicity, it doesn't matter. There's
right.
only one way to do it. There's only one path.
Right.
It's only one way.
Yeah, God's very clear that there is only one Torah for all of us, only one path for all of us, only one Passover for all of us, and only one covenant for all of us. So, Dwight, I think that's a pretty comprehensive answer to your question. Did we fail in any way to frame this issue for you?
No, I have. Yeah, so what Larry just brought up, I had brought up a passage, I forgot, it was just in the Torah where it calls upon the men, the women, and the children, and the strangers in the camp to stand up.
Yeah.
And receive the covenant. And I told this lady that the stranger in the camp would be a Goyim or a Gentile.
That's correct.
And they had the same opportunity to be part of the covenant.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that theme that you just mentioned, Dwight, is throughout the Torah. God says it everywhere in the Torah that in fact, anybody who wants to participate in the covenant, who wants to observe the Torah, is invited to do so, but the exact same conditions apply. So it doesn't make any difference if you're an African-American and I'm Sioux Indian. It makes absolutely no difference if Larry is a Israelite. The path that God has provided begins with Passover. We all celebrate the same Passover. The covenant has five requirements and five benefits. Those requirements are the same for you, my friend, as they are for me. Same for Larry.
Right. I have another.
Sure.
Now, the people who presently inhabit Israel, they're people who, I guess they're anti-Jewish, who say that these people are from the Khazarian tribe.
That's just a lie.
That's nonsense.
It's absolute nonsense. there's no basis for it at all.
I had one of the fellows from the Black Hebrew Movement tell me he could think of 7 million Zionists that need to die.
Yeah.
Now, that happens to be the population of Yisrael, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
You know, and didn't Yah say he was going to bring his people back there in the last generation?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Where that the Romans had grabbed, right?
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I mean, they all came back from there. So either Yahweh's words are wrong or they're right.
Yeah.
When we make
distinctions based on race and upend Yah's testimony, because Larry's right. Yah says that during this last generation before he returns, that he's going to bring his children back to his land. And so if those 7 million Jews that are living in Israel aren't his children, then God lied. So why are we bothering with any of this?
Well, that's true.
Oops, huh?
Yes,
I hate it when that happens.
They're going to talk about DNA evidence.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, there is none.
Pull up those pictures. Just Google. Pictures of Jews in Iran. Just do it.
Yeah,
They've been there 2,500 years. They didn't get there magically.
Yeah. I guess that Yahshua was a black man too.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess he was a black man too, and so was Abraham and Sarah. They had to also be black. But you know, the funny thing is, they came from today Iraq and Iran, which is the area of the Persians. Is where they both came from. They were from Ur of the Chaldeans, and Chaldean is a group name for Assyria and Babylon and Sumer, and those communities are not African, my friend. But you know, Dwight, it sounds like you absolutely understand all of this. You were way ahead of the game, but maybe we provided you with some other affirmation. Shatteringness, this is our last segment. We still have Larry with us. So, Larry, I'm going to make a statement, and I think this resonates with you. We can provide overwhelming proof that Yahweh exists and that he revealed his plan of relationship and of salvation to humankind in his Torah. But it seldom resonates with those who have been poisoned by man's religious or political schemes. Have you ever found a case where somebody who defined themselves as political or defined themselves as religious, where absolute proof that Yahweh exists and that he authored his Torah and that therein you will find his plan of relationships and salvation, where it will resonate and say, wow, I appreciate you sharing that with me. That's reasonable and rational.
No.
No. But have you tried the same thing with someone who is an agnostic, who is naturally prone to evidence and reason and who is open-minded, or with someone who is a former Christian, who typically Roman Catholic Church, and just said, oh, my God, there's so many lies. This is so obviously untrue, and has walked away, or they walked away from a Protestant congregation because there were so many conflicts with what they taught and what God said, and so many conflicts just with reality, that someone who has walked away from those two things and no longer identifies themselves as such, but knows that there is a God, just doesn't know how to know them. If with an agnostic or someone who is formally religious, if you presented the same evidence, do you find that the person is receptive and that what God says resonates?
Yes, because they're looking, or they wouldn't even be talking to a guy like me. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I have found that of those who are either agnostics or those who were formerly religious, that the majority of them, if they're absolutely willing to invest the time to learn, because it's a big commitment of time. If they're willing to invest the time, I have found that the majority of them come to embrace Yahweh, and it just all fits like a glove. They say, "Oh, it's exactly the way God needs to be, ought to be."
I don't know if Scott's available, if he's listening to us, but it might be a good question to ask Scott. Wasn't Scott agnostic?
Yeah, I was.
Yes, you were. Not anymore.
What happened when you saw this evidence? I mean, real evidence. Well, Yahweh's words in the raw. I guess that's the best way to put it.
I guess the thing that worked for me is that I've always known or felt there was a God. And then when you read something and you question it and you start looking at the details and you can't prove anything wrong, you kind of have to accept that. For me, anyways, that's what it was. And then it also was that you get a description of who he is, and it's everything that you would expect him to be.
So it's a combination of two things. One is that detail after detail was unassailable. I mean, God just made an airtight case that here I am, this is what I have done, this is how you can know that I exist and you can trust me. So the first was, you tried, but you couldn't find a flaw in his case. And the second was, man, everything he says makes so much sense. He's so daggone lovable, so approachable. He's exactly as you would expect God to be.
And even still, as I read and stuff like that, I still question things, and I try and find the answers to things. I probably never will stop.
Understand it all, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to understand it all, and I'm probably not. I'm always going to have questions that I want to have answered. So,
you and me both.
Yeah,
and that's the whole part of growing. Is recognizing there's more for us to learn, and there are things where we still have questions that we're seeking to answer, and that whole process of doing that is the great thrill of life.
I have to say, Yada, you're probably the most knowledgeable guy I know when it comes to scripture. Really?
Yeah. You know, I don't feel comfortable with that. But
you know what? Fine. Yeah. You don't feel comfortable with it.
Yeah.
From my perspectives, you can answer most of the questions. You've explained many questions I've had in a very succinct way. Point being, how much of the Torah do you think you know? Do you understand?
Yeah, and that's the point I'd make more than anything, is that I don't claim to know as much as I would like to know or as much as other may know. The one thing that Yah impressed on me is that there is something even better than knowing, and that's understanding.
Understand.
And once you make the connection with the information, or God provides a lot of information, once you make the connections between the things that he has provided and you transition to understanding, then you find that there is a natural answer to virtually every question. And so questions become easier to answer strictly based on understanding. Understanding is the thing that made David righteous. It made him after Yahweh's own heart. We'll return to Shattering Myths at this time tomorrow. May Yah bless. Thank you so much, Larry, for participating.